Welcome to episode 539 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the New York Comic Con recap episode. I'm going to give my thoughts about the show. I'm also going to play an interview I did at the show with artist Lee Garbett. He's the artist on Skyward, which is a really good title being put out right now over at Image. The writer is Joe Henderson, and it's just an incredible title, and I really enjoy it. The creative team's top notch. It was the first time I met Lee, and he was really cool. You can tell how much he loves comics. You know, I've met Joe several times. Lee himself hasn't met Joe, but I've had a chance to meet Joe. I guess just one time actually at San Diego, now that I think about it, but had him on the show several times, and he's just top notch as well. So I really hope you're reading that book. And like I said, it was great to talk to Lee and talk about the whole creative team and how everyone's really gelling. And the book's been received really well. Heard nothing but good things about everybody who's from everyone who's read it, I should say. So I'm definitely going to play the interview for you at the end of the episode. But speaking of Skyward, before I get into my recap, and this is going to kind of dovetail into something I'm going to talk about when I talk about New York Comic Con, I wanted to share a story. I put it out on Twitter today. And I just wanted to share it with you. If you remember earlier this year, we had Kelly Dale on. She's the widow of Jeremy Dale, who was a friend of the show and just a super nice guy, incredibly talented artist. I mean, just second to none. The guy had a heart just bigger than anything and really, really loved comics, was a huge fan of the medium. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2014. Due to some complications with an illness that he had, and it was really tragic. He was very young, and I was devastated. You know, Jeremy was such a great guy and so young and so full of life. And so when I found out that Kelly wanted to put out an omnibus with for Jeremy's Skyward project with all the previously published stuff and maybe an idea. And I toward reaching some stretch goals and putting out issue 10, because issue 9 did end on a cliffhanger. I thought that was great. She even had stretch goals on there to have a t-shirt made. It met that. So it was great. Like as soon as I found out, I reached out to Kelly. I said, hey, you know, I want to help you out. Let's help spread the word. Let's keep the memory of Jeremy's work and of him just as an incredible human being. Let's keep all that alive. It's very worthwhile. So we had Kelly on the podcast. And then I think for the month that the podcast was, or the Kickstarter rather, was running, we played the promo in front of a few of our episodes a week just to kind of keep it there in everybody's mind. Hey, this is something worthwhile, and you know, you're getting a really good product. It's a hardcover. It's all Jeremy's work, and it's really worth it. There's a lot of value there. And as I said, it succeeded beyond Kelly's wildest imaginations. I think when she was on the show, she talked a little bit about freaking out and being kind of stressed out that it wasn't going to reach the goal. And she was telling everybody, please don't let Kelly freak out. You know, everybody get out there and pledge. And I think she had to be really, really pleased with the results. I think maybe one thing that she wasn't necessarily prepared for was that kind of response, in as much as she really took a lot upon herself as far as getting everything packaged up and shipped out. So I know some people, it took a little longer for them to get their packages. But you know, I'm pretty sure Kelly made sure that everybody who pledged obviously got their tiers fulfilled. And I was one of the ones that I had to wait a little while, and that was fine. I completely understood how busy Kelly was. I think she had an illness herself sometime in there that kind of took up some time, and just, you know, life happens. And, you know, I fully expected to get my package, and today I did. And I had remembered Kelly asking me during one of the conversations that we had about the Kickstarter, and this wasn't on the podcast. It was a different conversation or phone call that we had about, I think she asked me like what my favorite issue was or my favorite cover. I don't know, something along those lines. And I said, oh, you know, that's really tough. There's so many good issues, you know, and I kind of like, you know, different issues for different reasons. But I think I said, issue six, I think, if I had to pick one. So today my package comes, and it's a really big package, and I'm like, well, I don't think the omnibus is this big. And then I started thinking as I'm opening the package, well, maybe she sent me a piece of art to thank me for helping support and spread the word about the Kickstarter, which at that point I was like, she really didn't need to do that. You know, I was a big fan of Jeremy's. I considered him a friend, and obviously I'm grateful if she sent a piece of art, and that's really, really cool of her, but it wasn't necessary. So I open up the package, and I pull out the omnibus, and that's great. And I pull out the shirt, and I had actually forgotten about the shirt at this point. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. It stretch goal reached the shirt. And then there's I realize that kind of at the bottom of the package, the reason it's so big is there's a portfolio in there, right? Like one of those books that, if you're not familiar with a portfolio, it's a thicker book. It has pages that have plastic sleeves on either side, and you can fit 11 by 17 pieces of comic art in there, right? Like that's usually the size that comic artists will work in. It's 11 by 17, and it gets shrunk down after they've drawn it to fit on a normal size comic page. And I thought, well, that's weird. She sent me a whole portfolio with a piece. She put the art in a piece of portfolio to keep it from being bent. Like that's kind of weird, but cool. Now, I have a portfolio to put some of my other artwork in. That's fine. And so I pull it out of the package. And as I turn it over to look at the front, I see the front of the portfolio says Skyward Issue 6. And I just kind of froze for a second. And I was like, no. And I open it up and I start flipping through it. And sure enough, she had sent me the original artwork for the entire issue of issue 6 of Skyward. And I was just floored. I'm talking about it. I'm telling all of you about it. And I still can't believe it. It's such a generous thing to do. I mean, this artwork is really worth quite a bit of money. And, Kelly and I had talked about it. She had talked about offering the artwork up as a tier in Kickstarter that you could get a whole issue. She didn't really want the artwork broken up. And she wanted the artwork to go out to people who would really appreciate it and treasure it. And so I think that was kind of behind some of her thinking in sending the artwork to me. It just was so far above and beyond anything that I expected. I didn't really expect anything other than, what I had pledged, my omnibus and my shirt and everything. And I was happy to help her out. But I have to say that it was such a moving gesture. And anyone who knows Kelly, anyone who knew Jeremy, probably not really surprised by this. They're both such generous and kind-hearted people. And I think Kelly had mentioned she wanted the art to go to people who were really going to appreciate it. And I'm sure she knows the love that I had for Jeremy and the love I had for his work, especially his Skyward series. And she knows that I'm going to treasure it. And really, part of the reason it touches me so much is that I feel like this is Jeremy's hard work, his blood, sweat, and tears and time. His heart, his passion, his love of the medium poured out onto a comic page as art, right? I look at it as a piece of him, a piece of his spark, a piece of his artistic talent. Not to get too existential or anything, but almost a piece of his life force, like a piece of him that she has shared with me. And that touches me so much, the fact that she would do that. And it's like not that I already didn't have, some Jeremy Dale original art and obviously his work, his Skyward issues and such. But just the fact that I have this original issue of art, it's like having Jeremy here. With me, and that's beyond anything I could have ever dreamed or imagined. It's just so generous. And so, thank you, Kelly, so much. It really means a lot to me. I was just so taken aback, and I couldn't even I couldn't do anything but kind of just sit there I was just stunned. And even when I called my wife and told her about it, I was getting choked up because it's just so far above and beyond and so generous, and it means so much to me. And my I was like trying to tell my wife, and I kind of had to stop talking because I was getting choked up. And she's like, "Are you there?" I'm like, "Yeah, sorry. I'm just getting a little emotional." It's just amazing. And so, I tell you that story to, also kind of dovetail into, New York Comic Con, before I get into specifics. And I tweeted about this earlier, as well. It's that I saw so many creators there. And so many creators I talked to talked about, and it wasn't that they were necessarily surprised, but maybe they were just reminded, is the best way to put it, about what a great community comics is and how much the fans are really enjoying comics and enjoying the stories that are going on right now. And if you're to look online, certain places, social media, it seems all doom and gloom, right? Like people are talking about comics are dying. The sales are down. You know, people aren't doing things the correct way. They're complaining about the storylines that are being told. They're complaining about characters being killed off. They're complaining about which creators are working on which books and that these creators don't have the right credit or whatever. You know, they're all voicing their opinion. And so it's very easy if you look in certain corners of social media to really feel negative about comics, to really feel like things are bleak. And so I think that's part of the reason that some of these creators that were out there over the weekend at New York Comic Con were meeting fans and hearing about how much the fans there were excited and we're happy and we're loving the medium. And I think it recharged a lot of people, and it reminded a lot of people of why they do what they do. And you can't necessarily believe everything you read or see on the internet, you know. And I've said this before myself, it's like you have to understand that the people on the internet who are the loudest are the ones that are complaining and they draw the most attention. But for the most part, the people that are enjoying things, they don't say anything. They kind of keep quiet. And I read an article recently that talked about the fact that someone is 70% more likely to respond to something that makes them angry or upsets them online rather than things that make them happy. So most of the time when it's something that's really cool or great, they just don't say anything about it, right? And so it doesn't end up having the same kind of reach as some of the negative stuff. So I'll challenge everybody that's listening right now to not be so knee-jerk and respond to the negative and amplify the negative and give them give those people spouting these negative ideas and this kind of attack mentality, don't give them a voice, you know. Instead, if you feel like responding to somebody who's being a jerk or who's angry or whatever, you're not going to change their mind, right? They're entitled to their opinion, so let it go. Instead, go find something positive about comics or sports or whatever it is that's your thing. Go find something positive and retweet that and talk about that, right? It's all up to us individually to make those choices, you know, in that moment. To choose not to amplify something and retweet something that's negative, or even respond to it. Better to just ignore it. And I know there's the whole argument that, you know, if you ignore things, you're kind of, you're complicit. But, you know, there are certain times to stand up and say something, and there are certain times to just let it go. And I think that the best way to fight the negativity about the comics industry online is to spread the good. Spread a message about things that you like, or creators that you're following who are really killing it on a book, or great artwork you like. Like that's what I learned this weekend in seeing these creators respond, and not just creators that I talked to at the show, but also creators online. I saw a lot of creators online talking about what a great time they were having at the show, and how it was so good to feel the love, so to speak, of all these comic fans. I think specifically Scott Snyder and Brian Michael Bendis were talking about how great it was to meet fans, and how overwhelmingly positive the fans were when they did get a chance to talk to those two. So, what Kelly did for me today kind of shows that it really is about the love of community. It's a very small community as far as comic creators. I mean, there are more Major League Baseball players than there are comic book writers. There are more professional football players than there are comic writers. And when you think about that, I mean, those are considered like elite, right? Like you have to be a really good baseball player or a really good football player in order to become a professional athlete. And there are more people that are able to do that than there are people that are writing comics. I mean, when you think about it, like how many people would love to write Batman, right? Just love to write Batman. And there's two. There's who's ever on Detective and who's ever on the Batman title. That's it, right? And so when you think about that, here's a character that's known around the world. There are two people at a time that are writing him. I know he's in Justice League and some other kind of group books, and at various times in his history, he's had more than two titles, Shadow of the Bat, Legends of the Dark Knight, and such. I get it. But for the most part, there's two, right? I mean, that makes you pretty elite when you stop in and think about that. So you shouldn't ever think for 1 minute that Tom King and Peter Tomasi, or who's ever writing Detective, James Robinson, I guess, recently Brian Hill before him. You can never think that these guys are phoning it in or they're not trying to do their absolute best. Nobody ever sets out to make a bad comic. It happens, you know, for various reasons. Sometimes it's deadline. Sometimes it's jitters. Sometimes it's just not the right pieces of a creative team and they just don't gel. It doesn't come together. Sometimes there can be editorial interference or corporate interference for one reason or another. There's plenty of reasons for it to go wrong. But remember that the people behind those books, they're people. They make mistakes. They're human. They're not setting out to deliberately ruin the character you love or deliberately put out a bad comic. They're doing their best to put out a great comic. And so I think it's important to remember that there are people behind the, on the other side, people behind the stories, people behind the art, and they deserve to be treated as people, which means no name calling. If you have a valid critique, you know, every creator I've ever talked to has been pretty open to talking about things that didn't work, and they're oftentimes aware of what didn't work and why. And so those are conversations that are worth having, but you can do it in a respectful way. And especially, I would say if it's somebody you love, some character you really love and you want that feedback, if you're going to see that creator at a show, I would say wait and talk to them about it in person, because even if you are trying to be respectful online, we lose a lot in social media communication, right? There's the body language is not there. The nuance is not there. The inflection is not there. So it can come across as attacking somebody when you don't even mean to. But not everyone has that opportunity. Not everyone can make it out to a convention. So again, I think most creators are open to constructive criticism, and they do want to know what the reaction is to their work that they're putting out. And again, I think for the most part, things that are put out are really good. But every once in a while, there's something that just doesn't work, and they want to make sure it doesn't happen again. So feedback is fine. Name calling and physically and verbally abusing someone or attacking them is not fine. It's not okay. But again, I think that being that it's a small community, it does feel very much like a family. And as a fan, you can be part of that family. I know we're all looking for connection and validation from some of our favorite creators. And it's what's great about comics these days and about social media is that it does let you have this interaction with other creators that are some of the voices and brains behind these beloved characters. You know, when I was growing up, it didn't have that opportunity to communicate with creators, at least not in this way. I mean, you could write letters into the letters page and maybe it would get printed if it was a really great letter, but it wasn't quite the, you know, it's not quite the same as it is now. You can get real time communication going, and I think that's something that's really special. Unfortunately, some bad eggs have ruined it for some creators, and some creators you can't find there anymore because they're just tired of putting up with all the vitriol. So there's so much to love about the industry and about these characters and stories that we love. And so, again, I just encourage everybody to embrace the positive sides of things. If you don't like something, you don't have to bash it. You don't even have to buy it. Not every comic is made with every reader in mind. Some things are, you know, aimed at one particular audience or another, and you may not be in that audience. So the good thing is we're sort of in a golden age of comics right now when it comes to variety and story. So I don't think there's any shortage of good comics out there. You just need to find what speaks to you. And now let me get off my soapbox a little and talk a little bit about the show in particular. And as I said, you know, not to bash anything or, you know, say this was a terrible show, but I am going to talk about what I would consider kind of the negatives of the show. Just, it's more of the places where I think it could improve or things that I think you need to be aware of if you're going to go to this show, kind of the gotchas, if you will. That'll make it a little easier for you to move around and plan for things. So the first thing I would say about the show that's that could use some work or an area where they can improve is the Javits Center itself. And again, this is completely out of the hands of Reed Pop, right? It's not anything they can control. There's not another big convention center where they could have this show in New York. And so this is where they've chosen to have it. And it is a fairly big convention center. And I think for most shows, it's more than adequate. And I think I heard from some locals that they often have three or four different kind of conventions going on there at the same time. That's clearly not the case when it's New York Comic Con, because it takes up all the space and then some. And that's where the logistics of the convention center kind of work against a show the size of New York Comic Con, because it's not like just, okay, here's one story, here's two story, here's three story, here's four story. It's multi-leveled, but some of the levels like are in between, right? So you walk up like half a flight of stairs or go up a really short escalator, and there's like a middle layer, and then you go up another half and there's another. So it, you know, think of it as like a tri-level house, so to speak, but this is actually four levels. And so what happens, because it is so multi-level and you know, it's not all the same. It's different. There's different levels depending on where you are. To get up and down the different levels is kind of problematic because the escalators are pretty small and there aren't a lot of them. And so what ends up happening is it ends up creating all these choke points where it's really hard to move around. And unlike San Diego, where it's flat, and San Diego has all of the like booths in one area, the show floor is not like that at New York Comic Con. There's also not a giant lobby where there aren't a lot of people. Because this convention center is smaller and you've got the same amount of people as San Diego, and you don't have any place outside to really hang out, a lot of people hang out in the lobby. So, you know, I've talked a lot in the past about in San Diego, if you want to move from where like all the publishers are over to Artist Alley, you just go out in the lobby and you can zoom across without fighting the crowd. It's not like that in New York. Whether you're on the show floor trying to get from point A to point B, or if you move out to the lobby to try to get to point, it's wall-to-wall people everywhere. There's not a lot of empty spaces. So it's that would be like the biggest knock against the show. And again, it's not a knock, so to speak, because there's not anything that Reed Pop can do about it. It's just the logistics of the convention center, and it's only so big, and the people have to be somewhere. So just be aware that it does take a lot longer to get from one place to another, just based on how many people there are and how big the convention center itself is. It makes it tough. Also, the DC booth is not on the main show floor. I don't know whose decision that is. They're kind of off on their own, which is both positive and negative. It's good in that the show floor gets pretty tough to move around in, And so at least if you go to the DC booth, it's relatively easy to get to, sort of, more so than it would be maybe if it was on the floor. But it's also like there's nothing else around it. So if you want to go to the DC booth, it's like it, you can't just like cruise by the DC booth while you're doing other things, right? On your way to one thing or another. Like if you want to go to the DC booth, it's, you go there because that's, you know, like I'm going to go to the DC booth. And so it's both good and bad. I feel like it loses a little bit. It doesn't feel quite as connected to the rest of the show. And it's not, it just doesn't have the same kind of camaraderie. It doesn't feel like it's part of the comics part of the show, the way the rest of the booths, the comic booths do, with people like walking by and, you know, like a fellow creators will, you know, bump into each other there on their way from one place to another. And you can meet creators, whatever. Like if you go to the DC booth, it's because you're going there. They did have plenty of signings throughout the weekend, which is really cool. And they had some really cool displays and it was a big area. But again, it just, I think it loses something for not being on the show floor. And I think the loss outweighs the gain in terms of it being kind of off on its own. So again, just kind of my opinion. Another thing that I'll say is the show floor itself. So this is another one of those good thing, bad thing. If you're just a fan of one particular thing, they don't put all the booths for one particular thing in one spot, right? So the comic publishers are sort of in the same general area, but it's also mixed in with some other multimedia video games and this and that. And so from a publisher's perspective, because I was talking to some of the publishers about this, it's great for them because you get a lot of cross traffic, right? You get people walking by your comic booth who might be on the way to a video game booth who may discover something, discover comics, and so you have that cross-pollinization. The bad part is there's no one part of the floor that's less crowded than another because of what's in that particular spot, right? Like small press maybe isn't as crowded usually as the video game area, so to speak. But when you mix everything up, when you jumble everything up, then everything is fair game. And so it does make it really hard to move around on the floor because there are just people everywhere. So, you know, San Diego, for example, where the part of the floor that has like the TV studios, TV networks and the movie studios and such, that area is like super crowded and you have to go through that area to get from Artist Alley to the comic book publishing area and vice versa. And so again, like I just mentioned earlier, if you want to get to those point A to point B quickly, you can go out in the lobby and skip the whole movie and TV area and don't have to fight the crowd. Again, it's not like that at New York. Everything is right next to everything else. So it makes it a little tougher. So those are the only negatives that I would really say, as far as the convention center and the show goes. Maybe one more. And again, this isn't really a negative. It's just kind of the logistics of the show. And I can't remember who I was talking to about this. It was one creator or another. It might have been Robert Venditti, actually. We were talking about the fact that, so at San Diego, you walk outside of the convention center and it's still Comic-Con, right? Like you have some offsite places where they have panels, the hotels, the gas lamp is full of activations and they've got the streets, you know, cut off from traffic and it's one big party, right? You walk outside and it still feels like Comic-Con. There's tons of people down there celebrating who don't even have badges to the show. They're cosplaying and everything. It's great. You walk outside of the convention center here and that's it. It's just New York City. Is it crowded? Yes. Is it busy? Yes. Are there tons of people? Yes. Just like at San Diego, except that all those people aren't there for Comic-Con. They're just there because it's New York City. So it doesn't have the same kind of feel, especially after hours, like after the show's done. It doesn't still feel like a, you know, oh, I'm at Comic-Con, you know, a 24-hour party. It's like once you walk outside of the convention center at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, that's it. You're done for the day until the next day starts back up. So it loses some of that feel. And again, it's not really a knock against the show, but just be aware that it is its own separate animal. It is quite different from San Diego. And I know I keep comparing it to San Diego, but you kind of have to, because San Diego is the only other show that comes close to New York's Comic-Con in size. And so it is a pretty big difference. And I did hear from a few creators that it's very corporate, and the prices to exhibit there keep going up every couple of years. I can't really speak to that. All I can speak to is the way they treat press, which is actually pretty good. This all comes down to supply and demand. It's not anything that I would put a blame on anybody. But San Diego Comic-Con is the biggest show in the world, and so it has press that come in to cover it from around the world. And so what that means is, as a person covering the show, you're fighting for slots to go and cover things with a big group of people, right? So there's only so much supply of access to press events and interviews and such, but there's a big demand, right? So the demand for coverage far outweighs the supply of things to actually cover. And so at San Diego, you kind of struggle. You have to know people, and you have to have proven yourself to some extent, because the PR people are very much the gatekeepers of what you get access to. So for New York Comic Con, because it's not a Hollywood show, because it's not as well known, because you don't have as many press people, it's kind of flipped, right? You've got a lot of content there that needs to be covered, and that's the bigger piece, right? The supply is much bigger than the demand that you have, because there are so many fewer press people there, especially for comics. And granted, there's not as much multimedia there because it's not in proximity to Hollywood, but there's still plenty of TV shows and movies and animated features and comics, and there's still a ton to cover. So in that way, if you're press, I would recommend going to New York, because you will get more access. You will get an opportunity to do more one-on-one things, one-on-one interviews, press lines, and things like that. It's not always feasible if you go by yourself, as I found out this year covering it myself for LRM, because I did mention the size of the Javits Center being kind of a limitation. They don't have really giant programming rooms. So what they end up doing for some of the multimedia stuff is you end up going to Madison Square Garden, which is about a mile away, or you go to the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is about a mile in the other direction. And so you're looking at walking for 30 minutes to get there and then 30 minutes back. If you're just there to cover multimedia, then maybe you stay at one of those two places all day and you just cover everything that's at that spot, and then you don't really miss out. For me, you know, I'm there to cover comic stuff for the most part, and so I couldn't really afford to take an hour travel time to go cover a 15-minute press line for an NBC show or something like that. So it wasn't necessarily worth it for me. But again, if you're with a site that that covers that kind of thing, then maybe it will be for you. If you're just an attendee, then I think the same thing applies. You've got to, and I've talked about this before in the show, you've got to plan, you've got to know what your priority is. And if your priority is to see the first 20 minutes of Battle Angel Alita and it's being screened at one of those other places, then that's where you go, right? Like, you make that your priority, and then, you know, you tick it off the list, and you can move on to the next thing on the list. But again, it's just a limitation of the size of the convention center and the way everything is laid out. And it's very much its own animal. I didn't have any problems with any of the like fans or other people there. I thought everybody was in really good mood. I thought everybody was really there for comics. It is much more of a comic centric show. It's by far the best artist alley I've ever been to in my life. If you're a comics fan, it is the artist alley to go to. Nearly every artist exhibiting there, every creator exhibiting there, I'd say upwards of 90% was somebody that's actively working in the industry. A lot of times when you go to San Diego, let's say, or some of these other shows, you get a lot of artists who are trying to break in, or artists who used to work in comics and are not so much anymore, or between projects or what have you. But this show, as far as Artist Alley, was bar none the best I've ever been to. I think I had a list of like close to 80 creators that I wanted to talk to. I think I did interviews with about 20 of them. And then I probably set up another 20 or so interviews to do in the upcoming weeks. So, you know, a lot of creators that I never would have got a chance to talk to because it's the only show they do, whether it's because they're foreign or they're just based on the East Coast or what have you. It was really, really great. The programming is not – there's not a lot of programming. I'll say there's not a lot of program rooms, but I feel like the programming that's there is pretty high quality and there's something for everybody. And I certainly think that San Diego has it beat hands down. But again, a much better, bigger convention center that has a lot more room for programming. This one's a bit limited, but I will give another shout out to Reed Pop for the fact that they have reserved seating up front for the press, which really helps with being able to live tweet panels and you know, pull out your laptop and type up your article right then. You know, I know that San Diego doesn't, you know, do reserve seating for the most part. They do for, you know, a few certain panels, but it's really tough when you're there on your own and they tell you, you know, no special, you know, access for press. You got to stand in line with everybody else, but I'm more than willing to stand in line. I'm not trying to you know, to get in there and take somebody else's seat who really wants to be in there. But it's not always feasible for me when I'm, you know, trying to do these interviews with creators and bring as much content to those who don't get to attend as I can. It's not always feasible for me to go and stand in line 45 minutes ahead of time. So again, I think it's really cool that they have those reserved seats. And at no point did I ever see anybody who couldn't get into a panel that they wanted to get into. Or, and at no point did I ever see all the reserved seats taken up either. So granted, I didn't go to, you know, some of the biggest, most well-attended panels. They're usually not the comic ones, right? And so I didn't have to fight for seats like that. But, overall, I think it was a really great show. It was a lot of fun. It's New York City, which, you know, has its own challenges. It tends to be a little expensive, hotel rooms and flights and all that. And just getting around in the city is kind of tough. You know, you kind of walk everywhere. It takes longer and this and that. But those are minor quibbles. I think if you're a big comics fan, like if you're a comics is like your thing, like you don't care so much about the movies and the TV kind of thing, and you've been having a hard time getting a badge for San Diego, I would say New York, man. Try that because, like I said, as far as access to creators, it's far and away the best show I've ever been to. There were so many creators in Artist Alley, happy to talk about their work, happy to chat with fans and chat with their fellow creators. So all in all, I think it's a great show. It's, you know, I've compared it a lot to San Diego here, but it's a completely different beast. It has a totally different feel. It's quite different than the experience that's offered at San Diego. So I think they're both worthwhile and in different ways. And I do recommend both shows. If I had to pick one, I would say it really depends on what your focus is. If you're more into general pop culture and the multimedia, the movies, the TV shows, all that kind of stuff, then San Diego's for you. If you're more into comics, then I would say New York Comic Con is for you. So that's kind of my thoughts on the trip overall. I'll be better prepared for it next year. You know, it was my first year. I didn't know what to expect. And I wasn't as prepared to be as busy as I was. And plus, I did cover some other multimedia stuff for LRM Online that I won't have to worry about next year because I'm pretty sure we're going to have a much larger contingent. And again, I won't be in such a hurry to talk to so many of the creators that I hadn't had a chance to meet before. So I think I'll enjoy it even more next year. So it was a great time. I'm glad I went. I definitely would do it again. And thanks to Reed Pop for providing me with the press pass. And thanks to you all for listening. I did meet a few listeners there, and also handed out some Comic Source lanyards at a couple of the panels to some hopefully new listeners. So shout out to anybody that I met there and gave a lanyard to, either at the Valiant panel or the Aftershock panel. We're glad to have you on board the Comic Source, and I hope you like what you hear. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. I want to remind everybody, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, next show I'll be at is Comic-Con LA, the last weekend of October, and I may even be doing a panel there, so stay tuned for more details on that. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. I'm going to go ahead and play the Lee Garbett interview for you now. I hope you all enjoy it. Hello, everybody. This is Jace from The Comic Source coming to you once again live from New York Comic Con. I'm lucky enough to be joined by comic illustrator Lee Garbett. So thanks for joining me, Lee. It's great to have you on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I've been a fan of you for a long time. And recently, I have to give you a shout out on air about your amazing guest penciling gig on Immortal Hulk.
Oh, thank you.
That was absolutely incredible. For some reason, I missed it. I didn't know, and I picked up the issue, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Lee.
Yeah, right. Well, it's because it's Al Ewing's writing, and obviously we worked on Loki together. So, and he's a friend. The very first comic thing I ever did for 2008 was like a one-page future short, and Al wrote that as well. So we've worked off and on together like through my entire kind of comics career. So we talked about it. And yeah, as soon as there was a space, I was definitely going to work with Al again.
That's awesome. So, but we're here to talk about Skyward,
sure,
which is an incredible series from Image with writer Joe Henderson.
Yep.
Now, Joe told the story on the podcast about how he gave you the story to read just to get your advice, right?
That's right. I heard that.
And then tell the story.
Well, I think it was just a case of he messaged me and said, because I'd gone to San Diego and I hadn't realised they were going to be there. I didn't know anyone from the Lucifer show. And I'd seen him, he messaged, we back and forth on Twitter, so I sort of messaged back, and he was like, he then sent me this thing, I don't know how many weeks later or whatever it was, but as soon as I read it, I think he said, do you know anyone who might be free? I assume you're exclusive, I assume. And I actually wasn't at the time. So I read it and said, well, yeah, me. I could be free for this. And it was one of those things where the more I read it, and certain scenes were popping out. Just the opening sequence from issue one, where it begins, where the gravity starts to sort of, it just switches off. It just had me hooked. And I think it was also in there was the second issue scene of as you approach Earth and you see like a what looks like a ring around Earth, and it's actually the carnage and all the bodies and stuff. Those two things, by the time I'd finished reading those, it was a case of like, well, I couldn't let anyone else draw it. I'm not going to let go.
Did you, right away when you read the story, did you have visually in your head how you were going to deal with this low gravity Earth? Like right away, did things start popping in your head?
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one because as I said to Joe, before I was in comics, I've been doing comics for about 10 years. I was like, I've always drawn, but I was like doing concept art for games and things before that. But then for like fun and for when I was younger, I would just draw, what I thought were like sort of cool female characters, and I was really sort of inspired by like Mobius, and he seemed to draw a lot of people floating through cities, and I would do that all the time. So I one of the first things I remember trying to paint was someone's like on like a, do you have space hoppers? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a girl on a space hopper floating through a city. So it was just reading it was really strange. It was like, well, this is stuff that I would do, you know. So it was very, it felt very natural.
So it's almost like Joe had written it with you in mind, with the things that you
said that. It's actually quite strange. We've obviously both got this thing for floating about. But yeah.
Yeah, and being able to design aspects of the real world with a twist based on how the low gravity would affect them, like giant dragonflies, for example.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of fun?
Oh, yeah. It's you have to definitely sort of watch that you're not putting cups down on tables and stuff, you know, that sort of thing. And try not to keep people sort of talking like upright too often, which can be quite difficult if you're if there's like a very emotional scene and someone's like whizzing around. So it's hard to balance. But yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, the dragonflies and what a twist that was. I didn't see that coming actually. When you sent me that, I was like, well, of course, it makes perfect sense.
And we have to give a shout out to your color artist on the book, Antonio Fabella.
Yeah.
The colors are so exquisite, and I really noticed as the second arc starts, things are not quite as bright and hopeful as for Willa as they were, you know, based on what happened in issue 5. And yeah. I really noticed that Antonio's art took a little bit of a darker tone.
Yeah.
So how closely do you work, and how do you give visual cues to Antonio, or is that all him?
We have a little bit of back and forth. I mean, I like to try and leave the colorists to do, you know, their thing. I don't want to sort of stifle anybody. But Antonio's just like, he's just like the best. And his lighting is superb. And you can see on some of the pages with the dragonflies, I mean, the black and white's at the end of issue 6, and then you see Antonio's colors. And the amount of, the level he's added into that, and the depth, it's sort of staggering. So he's... he'll often say like, oh, if there's time, I might go back and do that page because I've thought of a better way of doing it. So he's just so invested. He's brilliant.
And is there anything that you can say? I mean, I heard you talking at your table earlier to a fan that came up for an autograph. Anything you can tease visually? Because things are going to get even crazier than giant dragonflies, right? Like,
yeah.
Don't to spoil.
No, sure.
But just a little tease for what to expect.
Do you know what? I don't think I can, because the what happens in the third arc is... any description would really spoil what's coming. It sounds like a real cop-out, but it really would, because I can't think of any way to sort of describe what does happen next. This arc currently is... as Willa goes back out into the forest, you basically see why humans don't live out in forests. Because that's the first thing you think, oh, we'll just live up in the tree, be fine.
Right.
But yeah, there are nasty things out there that want to hurt you all the time. So you start to realise why. But there are people who do live out there. And she runs into those from issue 7. Oh, you see the guy riding the butterflies?
Yeah, yeah.
So these are like the farmers who are out there. You find out, you know, where the people in the cities, where the food comes from, and it's perhaps not what you would expect.
So I know Joe and I have talked about how he's really taking Willa on this journey.
Yeah.
You know, so visually, by the end of this, we probably should expect to see some growth in her visually as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think even from issue 1 to 5, I think she changed a little bit. I mean, sometimes you just get more familiar with the character, but I think also there's like a sort of a bit of a maturity to the character by the end of that arc. So yeah, I spoke to Joe about what I've tried to do, or I would like to do as well, is each arc maybe give her a little bit of a different costume or a jacket or something, so, or just something to show that this is a, you know, there is a bit of character growth there.
Right.
So yes, she will change somewhat. I don't think, not hugely. I don't think she's going to have time for many changes. So actually, the hardest thing is trying to find a way to get her to change.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be like a whirlwind, really. But I've tried to do that. And obviously, the hair will stay. And
yeah.
That's really helpful visually for, you know, mood and momentum. It really conveys so much of that.
Yeah, and the pace of the story has really, really picked up. I think for a new comic writer, the hardest thing to get down correctly is pacing, and
yeah.
So I think Joe's background in television storytelling,
yeah.
He's really nailed it.
Oh, he's amazing. I when you work with people who perhaps haven't been writing comics for a long time, they can be quite often, you know, those sort of three things being done in one panel type situations. And I haven't had any of that with Joe, and the sort of, I mean, the whole concept and the high concept of it is amazing, and the story he's got planned is beautiful, but. what really struck me is just it's the warmth and the heart of the characters. It just really pours out of them. So, yeah, he's phenomenal.
Well, great. I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me, Lee. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners, upcoming work or anything at all?
Not really. I mean, other than we're on Skyward. We've got the first 15 issues mapped out. I'm drawing 9 at the moment, so we're going to keep on with it, and I hope people will check it out.
Good. And I also, listeners, I would encourage you to follow Lee on Twitter, because he loves interacting and getting reactions from readers.
Yeah, so feedback.
Go check out the show notes. I'll put a link in there to Lee's Twitter, and you'll know where to go and follow him. Thanks again.
Cheers. Thank you.